Hello and welcome to ReggieTake.com podcast number 32. Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart ride off into the sunset in the spectacular and moving Logan, a comic book movie any movie lover should go see. And Bill Paxton, a beloved actor from such movies as Aliens, True Lies, and Twister, passed away in late February. We'll take a look back at his movies and what made him such a fun actor to watch. Joining me is my co-host James, as we will talk about those topics and much more, I'm sure. James, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Hey, what's up?
Not too much. Enjoying the nice weather. It's March, but it feels like May.
If you look at the release calendar, it almost feels like a May or June movie kind of month. I mean, we started off with Logan, which we're going to talk about, and then Kong's come out, and then after Kong, you get Beauty and the Beast, and then after Beauty and the Beast, you get the Power Rangers movie, which I'm not interested in whatsoever. I was too old when the Power Rangers came out, so therefore it really has no interest in me anyway, even if it turns out, let's say, be the one of the top five movies of the year, which I'm doubting it that it will be, but, you know, it just has that feel of one summer blockbuster type movie after another coming out, and it's only March, which is kind of unusual. I mean, it used to be you didn't get these type of movies until May, so now it's like you hit February, you know, and all of a sudden you start getting some of these bigger action movies starting to come out because, you know, they released Batman versus Superman in February. Actually, that was late March. Deadpool was February. So, you know, it just seems like the summer movie season is, there's really no end except for maybe January anymore.
Boy, I gotta say, incredible segue. That was actually totally improvised. There was no rehearsal for that whatsoever. So good job. I just throw them at you and you can swing them right back.
Being this is the 32nd podcast, you think that sooner or later, you know, you could develop into something a little bit better than the
you
first
think.
One. Yeah,
you think. Being how this is my 32nd year alive, you'd think I'd develop into something, but no, apparently existing is all that I do. So
Logan. I know I just recently watched it. From what I noticed on your Facebook postings, you managed to already see it twice.
Stalker.
Hey.
No, I'm kidding.
That's fine.
Yeah, it was a really, really good movie. I never thought I would say this. I figured by the time they would have one this good, I'd be over this whole genre by now. This is the best movie, best superhero movie, gotta say, since The Dark Knight. And honestly, it kind of gives The Dark Knight a run for its money. It might actually be a better movie. It might be the best. Now, it's not a traditional superhero movie. It's more of a Western, I feel. It's a fantastic movie. When The Dark Knight came out, if you asked me if any movie would ever be better, I never would have thought it would have been an X-Men movie either. At that time, they were really kind of going down the toilet.
Yeah, some movies like Fantastic Four.
What's great about X-Men is we owe it all to Hugh Jackman. He really stuck with it. They had a couple bad movies, and then they started building them. And then between Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds, who's with Deadpool, he's pushing that character almost as hard as Jackman was with Wolverine. All of a sudden, we're seeing something from Fox, of all studios, that we're not really seeing in Marvel Studios anymore. We still are. I don't want to say that, but to a much smaller degree, which is
pushing the envelope.
Well, I was going to say the directors and the actors' artistic vision being brought in. Marvel has become mostly pretty much a machine, and to be fair, they make a great product. There isn't a bad movie from Marvel. They're all really good. But right now,
well, with what you were just saying about with Marvel, Marvel has found that formulaic cog in the whole wheel that is clicking and it's working. And until they hit a bump in the road to cause them to rethink what they're doing, they're going to continue down that path.
Go back to Phase 1, though. Phase 1.
It had its ups and downs in Phase 1.
Well, I was going to say Phase 1 still allowed their directors more artistic license, I should say. Iron Man is Iron Man because of, obviously, Robert Downey Jr., but also Jon Favreau. And with Phase 2, you saw it a little bit with Iron Man 3 with Shane Black. That was really just because Robert Downey Jr. wanted it. You know, like, he was busting Disney up for having Shane Black. He wanted to work with Shane Black.
Well, I think Marvel wanted to make sure they got.
And James Gunn, they're still kind of letting him have
freedom on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, they have to. If they deny James Gunn, I get it with doing it with Avengers and Joss Whedon, and I get it with Kenneth Branagh and Thor. And actually, there was another director who was supposed to direct Thor 2. A lot of people don't know that. They had an artistic clash. But if they start telling James Gunn what to do on Guardians of the Galaxy, a franchise that no one has cared about. I'm a Marvel fan. I barely heard of them before. Honestly, I can't tell you if I actually did hear about them before
the movie
came out. There's one or two characters in the entire film that I am familiar with. So if you're going to tell him what to do on such an obscure and, let's be honest, probably lame franchise, there's a problem. Let him do what he wants to do with that. And the new trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy looks great. I think they know that they need to do that. You know, but the Captain America movies have been really good with the Russo brothers.
I think Captain America franchise has kind of been the standout. Divided up into Iron Man, yeah, Captain America,
yeah,
Thor.
They have
that
been.
Time, I think Captain America has been the standout franchise.
It has been. Although, honestly, like, I love that Guardians of the Galaxy, which, again, I don't really consider that a superhero movie. That's a space opera like Star Wars.
A fun space opera.
Yeah. Well, actually, space opera is wrong. It's a space western. That's a western in space, and it's which is what the first Star Wars was.
Or at least that's what it started out as.
Yeah. It still kind of was with Empire. With Empire, it kind of becomes something else altogether. But anyway, whatever. But with Guardians, that's definitely like a space western. And that's what's so good about it. It's got all these outlaws and it's really funny. It's no Deadpool, but that one pushes that PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
Rating pretty hard. Obviously, the MPAA, we all know they're a bunch of corrupt bastards.
And I really think the movie rating system needs to be really re-looked at again, because it seems like you watch a lot of PG-13 movies now that back in the day probably would have gotten rated R.
Well,
because they're trying to keep
it's
butts
money.
In the seat.
Yeah, it's all about money. We've talked about this before. That's why all these independent artsy films, you know, if they have, God forbid, a sex scene, or if even not even a sex scene, maybe just a movie about a lesbian, they're going to be like NC-17. And
yeah.
There's no way around it. The MPAA is not about protecting children. It's about making money.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's making sure the studios get the money they hope
they
to make.
If they don't think these little independent films are going to make money, they're going to keep them out of theaters. That's what it is. And that's why, like, Iron Man 3 and Guardians both of those should have been rated R. Guardians has a masturbation joke, for crying out loud. I don't know. I'm not complaining. I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm just saying. Well, and also, like, they're in the prison, and that one is... There's no innuendo about it. Rocket's pretty much like saying he's going to protect his literal ass from that other inmate. I mean, come on. I love that movie. I think that movie's hilarious. I think it's also, when it needs to be emotionally driven, it is. It is touching at times.
Mm-hmm.
Going on about a three-year-old movie. Let's go back to Logan, which is actually a better movie.
The one last thing, since you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy, is if you look at the main characters, all those guys are technically kind of guys, at least in the Guardians of the Galaxy universe, are supposedly on the wrong side of the law,
mm-hmm.
that are all now sudden becoming, because they saved the galaxy, are becoming looked at as more of heroes to a certain extent.
I'll tell you, if Logan... reminds, and it's supposed to, if Logan is based on Shane, which it obviously is because Shane's in the movie, Shane and Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, I would also say that Guardians of the Galaxy is at least somewhat inspired by Magnificent Seven, which of course was inspired by the Seven Samurai.
Yes.
There you go.
If this really is, and I tend to believe Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart they say this is their final time,
well,
these characters, at least so they say, if this is really the case, then Logan, whether you have or have not seen the movie, this is like the perfect farewell song, so to speak, to send them out on.
Now, Patrick Stewart has said he has considered being in Deadpool, but that's a little different. It's more like a comedy cameo, more or less.
Right.
He also said, and this would never happen, I was watching him on an interview, which was, I'll send you the link to it. It was fantastic. It wasn't an interview. It was Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman, a Q&A with them. And Patrick Stewart said he would also reprise the role of Charles Xavier if he could do a Star Trek X-Men crossover and got to play both Luke Picard and...
Oh, Jean-Luc Picard?
And Charles Xavier. And Hugh Jackman asked who would win in a fight. Stewart said there would be no fight because they both love peace. And It's like, yeah, you know, that would be a pretty good movie. Actually, there was an X-Men. I'm going to find it one of these days. I've seen it advertised in some of the old 80s comics that I read occasionally. There was a crossover between Star Trek and X-Men. I don't remember if it was original. Next Generation or original series. I really don't remember.
Yeah. That would be interesting to read.
Yeah.
Because I know here several years ago, they did a crossover between Next Generation characters and Doctor Who.
Did they really?
It was like a six or eight issue run, but it was limited. Okay. And I thought here recently, I read where they're going to do it again, possibly. Yeah. But
they could at least do a comic like that with Doctor Who. They could at least do a comic with Marvel and Star Trek, a crossover, or with X-Men and Star Trek. Because part of the reason why I think this is just because Patrick Stewart is in those movies. Mm-hmm. But the X-Men movies, at least, always felt like the Star Trek of comic book movies.
Really?
Where, like, it's a group of characters that we all like. Some of the movies suck, but some of them are really good.
I never thought about it in that realm.
There's always something a little bit, not always, the ones that suck don't do this, but there's usually at least an attempt to do something a little bit smarter than just save people and blow stuff up. It's always meant as, there's usually some sort of social commentary involved.
Yeah, deeper meaning.
The one being, the exception being X-Men 3, I think there was actually in the script. I think the script does have some sort of social commentary, but Brett Ratner just didn't get it.
Hmm. It's real quick, since we're way off subject here, is I wouldn't mind, and I know that probably never ever happened, is to see a crossover between Star Trek and Star Wars. But since the Lucasfilm Story Group now considers the comics as part of the kind of somewhat of their canon now, I seriously doubt they would ever really do that. But I'd love to see them, even if it was only like a 4-issue run, I'd love to see what they would do with that.
Yeah.
But I know it'll never happen.
No.
At least in the comic world.
Is that a real thing? Everyone likes to act like nerds. You always see that on TV shows. I've never once come across that where nerds get mad over Star Trek or Star Wars.
I like Star Trek. Star Trek has things that I like that make Star Trek Star Trek, and Star Wars has its own thing that makes me like Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say, okay, if I had to choose one franchise saying you can only watch this one or this one, I don't know if I could choose. But at the same time, there's different reasons for me for like
it. I would just choose one. It doesn't matter. Like, yeah. if this is the gun to your head scenario, I'd just choose one. It doesn't really matter.
I think I'd almost go Star Trek because it's got more movies to watch.
I'd rather just not get shot in the face. I'll just pick one whatever comes to mind.
But Star Wars is also, for me, is what I kind of grew up on. Sure. That's what I'm familiar with, where Star Trek kind of came later into my life as far as liking Star Trek. But that's a whole other subject. Going back to Logan, what was your initial thought of Logan?
Oh, my God. Initial thought.
What did you think of the movie? What made you like it? Is there anything in the movie that you didn't like?
No, there's nothing in the movie I didn't like. I think the movies, there were parts where I thought it was going to go bad and then didn't. Don't want to talk too much about this scene yet because the scene is really important and we got to try to stay a little bit focused. But there is basically a clone of Wolverine in the movie.
Right.
And when you first see it, I was like, oh, geez. But then when you see what they do with it, it never, ever comes off as corny or anything like that. Like, when the main villain is revealing his big master plan about putting some sort of vaccine in the corn syrup of stuff that people drink, it's at the end. I know you're looking at me confused, and that's what's so great, because the first time I saw this movie, I didn't catch it either. The main villain is revealing his master plan, and the movie could not care less. And I think that is just brilliant. He's going on about the corn syrup. He's off camera. Meanwhile, the camera is following the little girl, Laura, as she's sneaking around, and you can barely hear him yammering on. Any other movie, it would be this grandiose thing. I put the vaccine in the corn syrup to destroy the mutant race, blah, blah, blah. But instead, it's just off screen. And then when it finally does cut back to him, he's still going on and Logan just shoots him in the head. Because Logan doesn't care either. And I thought that was just absolutely brilliant. Yeah, who cares? Like, we've seen this shit. Excuse me. We've seen this crap a million times in these movies. So yeah, it's always some evil scientist doing something. Like, we get it. Let's just focus on, we're not here for that. We're here for something much more important. And a friend of mine described this movie as special, and I agree. This movie is very special.
I was really surprised. I mean, I'd seen what Patrick Stewart had looked like in the trailers as Professor X, and they kind of gave you somewhat feeling of where they were going go with this, at least with Patrick Stewart's character. But then when I first saw him in the movie and they introduced him and he's wheeling around in that, you know.
Oh, man, it's heartbreaking.
Seeing him do that and just kind of the way he's acting, you really like, oh, my God. It's like you instantly felt sorry for that character immediately. And he's just not the same person.
And then you also feel sorry for Wolverine because you feel really empathetic for these characters. Because
within the first 15 minutes for both those characters, all of a sudden you just feel really just
most of us, if we haven't yet, we will someday. Most of us have gone through that where a family member is either really old or really sick and they're just out of it, but we're still chugging along trying to make things better for them, even though they're not all there. And I know I can relate to that, and I think a lot of people can too. And that was a really, really sad moment in that movie. I mean, really sets the tone. I believe that this movie had two themes, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think the two themes that this movie had were death and redemption. And I mean, everything's coming to an end. And, you know, they did not.
And they didn't wait to get to the bloody violence. I mean, it kind of pretty much started right from the beginning with him in the limo and getting out. It's like, you know, you guys don't want to do this. Just go away. And he's more worried, not necessarily about him getting hurt, but he's trying to protect the limo from getting shot because at one point he dies himself in front of it and takes a bullet in the shoulder to keep the limo from being hit.
If he loses the limo, then he loses his job and then he can't take care of Xavier.
Just to see him basically I think he cut off one of those guys' arms.
Yeah.
Like at the elbow. I mean, you got an instant of where they were going to go with this immediately. And at the same time, you kind of got a little bit of a laugh at that scene, or at least I did, with the way he kind of was like, oh, come on, guys, you don't want to be doing this.
No.
You know? So, and then when you get to back where they're living, and he's actually keeping Xavier in Mexico, south of the U.S. border, I got the impression that the U.S. government was looking for Xavier, at least in this particular time period. I kind of got that impression, at least.
Maybe. I think,
because it seemed like he was being
Xavier?
Looked for.
Yeah,
he was being wanted.
They said that he's the most wanted nonagenarian, and they also said that his brain has been classified as a WMD. Boy, I really like that villain, too.
The main villain in the movie was really the one guy's henchman.
Yeah.
So you didn't really get the quote who would have been the guy pulling the strings. You really didn't get him until the latter half of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that worked fine for me.
Yeah, me too.
That the movie would have been that guy initially all the time, I think the movie wouldn't have worked as well.
That guy was a good actor. The character, and they didn't have to, trust me, they did not have to pull this character out of the comics. I would have been fine without it. But they did anyway, and I'm glad they did. His name is Donald Pierce in the comics. And I remember him from, I don't think he's a very big villain, but I remember him from the Phoenix Saga. He was part of the Inner Circle, the Hellfire Club. That also includes Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, that other guy.
So what's with half of those guys running around with mechanical hands or whatever?
Well, I'm getting there.
Okay.
So he was in the Inner Circle. He's a rich guy and that was basically, while you have Emma Frost and Sebastian Shaw and all these other guys with really cool powers, then he had Donald Pierce, and of course Jason Weingrade, who mastermind. Then you had Donald Pierce, who's just a guy with a robot hand. He wasn't even a mutant. It was really weird. The reason why, I guess, were there other guys with
props? Because my wife noticed there were a couple others that also had.
Were there?
Kind of had mechanical hands or part of arms.
If there were, I didn't notice that, but if there were, that would lead to still the Donald Pierce character. Years later, he was part of it after the Inner Circle. He was part of a group. This was in the late 80s when X-Men started getting like really weird. He was in a group of cyborgs called the Reavers, and there were other guys. There's one guy where he's basically got no legs, but his torso is attached to a tank.
And wow.
Then there's another guy, and then there's just Donald Pierce with the arm. I think the other guys, I'm not sure, but I think their limbs were cut off by Wolverine, because I seem to remember them always after Wolverine, but I don't know. That could have been something else. Because that was another thing in the comics. I think Wolverine was like really violent for that time, like pretty unheard of. So they addressed that. The other X-Men were like, I mean, you got to stop killing. So there's one. This is still like when he's attacking the Inner Circle. They have all these henchmen. And so instead of killing them, he just cuts off
off their arms. So then they come back with prosthetics. I almost wonder, maybe they weren't good enough writers for this to be true, but I almost wonder if that was just them going up to the comic code being like, we didn't kill him.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Like, I mean, this might be worse, but we didn't kill him. Anyway, all I was really going to say about him is I really like that actor. Somebody told me he was on the show Vikings. He was really good.
If you're talking about the same villain that I'm assuming you're talking about in the movie, when he initially let himself in Wolverine's limo and Wolverine telling him, you know, get the F out of my car, and he goes, I'm after somebody else. I don't care about you. And I found that really interesting that even though they figured out, you know, this is Wolverine, even though he's been trying to been in hiding, we know who you are, but I don't care about you. No. I don't want to deal with you. I'm after somebody else. And come to find out that somebody else is the girl. I just found that really interesting that, you know, they kind of introduce, quote, your main antagonist in that way. And I like that.
I think we're also focusing a little bit too much on plot right now. What makes this movie so good isn't necessarily the plot, although the plot was really good. I mean, this movie was nothing it's not that it was nothing I'd ever seen before. I mean, we've seen this type of movie before and lots of times, but we'd never really seen it before in a superhero movie. It's a very, not only violent, but also a very sad road movie. The part that really made me feel like this was a Western was, I believe that this scene is ultimately what pushed it over the edge to where there was no way, even if Fox wanted to get a PG-13 rating. And, you know, even with all the violence and all the cussing, I still think if Fox wanted to, they could have
forced it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think the movie would have been the same.
Well, I mean, even if they kept all the cussing and the violence, I think Fox could have gotten a hold of the MPAA, who nobody knows who they are, by the way. That's something we should do a podcast on. I think they could have made it a PG-13, but there's one scene that's just impossible, and that's the scene where that clone kills the family. And that was, well, that was rough.
What about even the hotel scene in the casino with Wolverine going through, forcing his way into the hotel room?
No, that's, I mean, that's not what I'm saying.
Not even that scene?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know, that was violence. But the one with the family, that scene is really, because it was such a nice family, and you get to know them as people. They're not just the Ma and Pa Kent one. Wannabes on, if you remember Wolverine Origins, that old couple that gets shot. You actually get to know this family, this husband, wife, and son. You get to know them pretty well, and then they just get brutally slaughtered. I think that is the scene that I don't think there's any way that they could have. I don't even know why I'm saying this theoretically. The fact of the matter is, Hugh Jackman actually took a pay cut to make sure that this movie stayed R-rated.
But I did read that.
I'm just saying, theoretically, that's the scene where you just can't go back on. And that scene is really also the scene that really made me think of this movie more as a Western. You know, you see this in Shane or in The Unforgiven, a lot of Westerns, even on Pale Rider. You see this on a lot of Westerns where there is a point where the bad guys come in and they kill the townspeople or whatever, and that's the point of no return for the reluctant hero who really didn't want to go back to gun slinging or whatever, like
forced him back into being a hero.
And that's what I think that scene did. That's what that felt like to me anyway. You know, we haven't even talked about Laura yet, who was
the way they introduced Laura and her violence, but without really showing exactly what she could do at first to the audience. I mean, you hear it, but you don't realize exactly how violent she could be until she comes out and the guy's like, Laura, and you could tell she's holding something, but you're not quite sure yet. And then she sits there and she rolls it out towards him, and then you realize it's a severed head.
Yeah.
That's when you're like, holy crap, this girl can kick some ass. And then just as you think they've got her contained and about ready to, you know, put her in those special handcuffs or whatever it is, and then you get that extra surprise of the claw coming out of her feet.
Yeah.
That was like wild.
You never
wild.
Really see that again, but yeah.
That was really wild. Wow, this girl just no holds barred. And that's when you got the sense of this girl can just go off.
Yeah.
That's also, I think, when Hugh Jackman's character really realized, laying on the ground watching all this, realizes, you know, maybe she is my daughter. And kind of that sense of, I got to start protecting her. Although I think he was going to protect her anyway. But
no,
still.
Not yet. No, he was ready to go.
Yeah.
He was going to leave her. It's like she can handle herself.
I like the way they kind of introduced her violence, but they didn't really give you her what she could fully do. You just kind of heard more of it with the guy screaming, and then she walks out just all pissed off.
Like all the good X-Men stories, both comics and movies. Like all the good ones, this one is definitely ripe with social commentary. And this one, you know, whereas X-Men 2 was more about gay rights, this one is definitely about like border patrol and all that. I mean, it's pretty obvious. In the opening scene, he's driving around the limo and you got a border patrol agent nonchalantly talking on the phone about how, yep, killed another couple by the border today. And then the next group he's driving around are a bunch of white frat boys, USA, drunk, yelling USA at the border. The kids, they're refugees. I thought that was brilliant. They're refugees in this movie. They're like, we go into it knowing they're the last of their kind, but they're trying to escape. If you remember, even before the Syrian refugee crisis, whatever you want to call it, even before that, a couple years ago, if you remember, there were refugees from Central America. They were usually children. They'd go through Mexico and then into the United States, and there was all that controversy about that. I think both of these issues are things that this movie was supposed to remind us of, and they did a really good job of that.
One of my favorite scenes in this movie, and it's just the way they did it, of him fighting against Xavier's having one of his outbursts, so to speak, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just frozen because his mind is projecting all this, and Wolverine uses his claws to get down the hallway.
Yeah.
Especially once he gets back up to the same floor, and as he's clawing his way down towards the door, and you see that one guy standing in the doorway holding the gun. It was great to see that guy as he's standing there, and all of a sudden all you see eyes move.
Yeah.
And realizing, you can see that look of crap, you know, and then he just comes up and just
right in the face,
you know, right into him. And then as he goes through one by one, every one of them was basically headshots with his claws, taking them all down. And then when he finally gets that needle stuck in Xavier to get him to stop, and then as soon as they do that, they all just go like dominoes right to the floor. It was brutal, but at the same time, kind of fun to watch in a weird kind of way. Another superhero movie, would you be able to get that kind of an action scene that doesn't really have any more action than the one guy going around, but every one of those shots were just brutal as hell.
Yeah.
I think that's what made this movie fun to watch in the same sense. You definitely got plenty of action in this movie, considering the storyline they were going with.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. This movie's kind of hard. You want to get excited about talking about what you saw on the screen, but at the same time, you almost want to feel like you want to pull back because of the tone and the somberness of kind of what he was going through.
Absolutely.
You don't want to make light of it either. So, you know, it's one of those movies, it's just, you're kind of on that fence of,
I feel like,
and they made you feel sad for almost Wolverine in a certain sense, at least from my point of view.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's a beaten down, kind of broken man at this point. He's just wanting to be left alone, and he seems like things keep finding him. And I don't know if you paid attention or not, or noticed, but in that scene where he's with all the kids, and he goes back into that shack for a while, and Laura comes in because Laura seems to be upset with him, and he says, I can't continue to do this. I can't do this, because basically saying, I can't care for you because everyone I ever care about always seems to die. You got that feeling. He wants to be that person to care for her, but he knows if he tries, he has that feeling that something bad's just going to happen to her. So therefore, he's reluctant to show that kind of emotion towards her.
I also like that we don't really know which timeline. Is this the first timeline? Did he and Xavier somehow escape the Sentinels, or is this the second one? They never really...
They make references back to first meet Xavier, and Wolverine's trying to give him his medicine and put him back into bed. They do talk about certain things.
But they never reference things that you've never seen before
either.
And I like that. Now, we do know that Xavier's first epileptic episode, he killed a bunch of people, and you assume that a lot of them were the remainder of the X-Men who were left, which is pretty messed up.
Don't they make mention of that? Yeah. Wolverine's listened to radio. That first time this quote happened was in Westchester, referring back to where his skull was.
It's a really sad scene right before he gets murdered. Charles says he remembers that. He said he didn't remember before, but now he remembers what he did.
So was he kind of going through his version of Alzheimer's in a certain sense?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it was Alzheimer's, but I know that's what Stewart said that he had based his performance on was Alzheimer's. So I think they even said he might have had it in the movie. I don't remember, but you assume that he has Alzheimer's, and well, insanely powerful psychic has Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
That could be really bad for everyone around him, apparently. Mm-hmm. So
I don't know if you want to talk about the ending of the movie yet, if you got anywhere else, because there's a point at the end of the movie that I'd like to talk about.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess there's two parts. After clone of Logan, X-24, is killed, and Laura cuts him off loose from the tree, so he's at least not attached to it anymore, but he's still got the thing stuck in his chest.
Mm-hmm.
he finally kind of has that moment of letting himself feel for her. At the same time, he's almost relieved that he finally kind of gets, and him saying, so this is what it feels like. I'm assuming he's referring to death.
Yeah.
About the same time he finally takes a hold of her hand, he says that, and then his hand goes and he dies.
Yeah.
And her saying, no, daddy, daddy, that was tough to watch. I know my wife bawled when she saw it, and I don't get too emotional at movies pretty much, but even though I never got watery-eyed or anything like that, you know, you definitely got that lump in your throat of, wow. And then the other part of it is, you see the rocks, and they've obviously buried him, all the kids around, and as soon as she's done saying what they say, the kids all start walking off, and she starts walking off, and she goes over, and she pulls up that cross that they made, and then they turned it over and put it in there, and then they kind of slowly zoom into it, and then they just go to black. I thought that was no better way of ending that movie. Absolutely. That was like so perfect.
Absolutely.
And whoever's idea was to do that with the wooden cross and turn it over and make it an X, they should give themselves a raise for it, because that was just brilliant in thinking. It really was, in my books.
Yeah.
You're not getting emotionally choked up there, are you, James?
A little bit. I think that Hugh Jackman is an incredible actor.
Oh, yeah.
He really is.
And to stick with that role for 17 years and 9 films, including this one, how many actors can say they stuck with a role for that long?
Yeah.
I'm saying outside of, like, say, Star Trek, because, you know, you get some of those guys who've shown up in 6, 7, 8 movies already. But I'm saying as far as that type of role where he has to put his body through that kind of physical torture to get himself ready for the role and then maintain that while he's filming it and then go back to kind of a semi-normal life for 1, 2, 3 years and then try and redo that again. And time and again, you know, that cycle of bulking himself up and letting himself go back down. I mean, that takes a lot of dedication on his part just to put that kind of effort into the role of becoming that bulked up. I mean, how many actors would have stuck with it and done it for that long? Not too many. What do you think of the Caliban character?
I actually really liked him. And, you know, that actor, I was actually going to look him up on my phone.
Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, thank you. Stephen Merchant. He's a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the British version of The Office. He's British. He's always on comedies. He's in most of the Simon Pegg movies in some form or another.
Now, does that character have a comic background?
He does, and I don't know anything about it. He's one of those bottom-of-the-barrel mutants that, you know, and when I heard they were using him, because they used him in X-Men Apocalypse. He was in that movie.
See, I read that, but I don't remember
seeing
him.
Different actor. He was the one. He's in Cairo, and he meets Storm. As far as I'm concerned, he's a different character with the same name. Like, it's Apocalypse. Who cares? But he's in that movie. You know, when I heard that, I was like, oh, man. The character was so lame. Why are they going to use him again? But they nailed it on this one. He really doesn't have powers. Like, he's really a liability. His power is so stupid.
But they made it work for this movie.
It does. What I'm getting at is you could never see him as, like, a superhero because his power is not that great. And aside from that, he's albino. He can't go out in the sunlight. He's a liability character. He doesn't really have, you can't even say he has good powers. He has bad powers.
Uh-huh. His powers are a liability not only to himself, but his friends and whoever it is he's around him.
Yeah.
And I thought
he was really good. I was worried because they had already used that character before and he's a dumb character. And the third reason why I was worried was because it was Stephen Merchant, who is really funny, but I was like, oh, geez, are they going to Jar Jar this up? But no, Stephen Merchant, to his credit, I've never seen him play a serious role before. He played this very straight, and he is really good. And I'm sure he's played a serious role. I've just never seen it.
I love the scene in that truck where they're at the family who gets slaughtered at the farm. Not sure what he's doing, but then he grabs those two grenades, and I forget what he says, but he says,
avoid the light.
As he releases those two grenades, internally I'm going, good for you, buddy.
No.
Good for you. I know that's kind of sad to say about someone who's going to off himself, but he did it for a reason to hopefully take out some of these guys.
Well, like the two main characters, that's why I believe that the two themes of this movie are death and redemption. Or maybe that's one theme, death and redemption.
Uh-huh.
He redeemed himself and then died.
I got a question about the guy Wolverine off in his head, you know, at the end, because he's just rambling on about stuff.
I have no clue if he's from the comics or not.
But they made reference that Wolverine killed his father previously.
I have no clue what they're talking about when they said that, honestly.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if we'd actually seen that in one of the other movies.
Not Stryker.
Right.
So, other than that.
It's the only thing I could kind of think about, well, maybe he's related to Stryker somehow, but his last name...
Stryker's son was on X-Men 2, and Stryker's son was a mutant.
And if they did show you something of that in a previous movie, then I'm not sure. The only thing I could think of was Apocalypse, where Wolverine breaks out, got that cameo. Mm-hmm. Maybe he killed him somewhere in there, but I'm not sure.
Maybe, but I don't know. Who cares? Like, I think it was just kind of an offhanded comment. Okay. I don't think it really meant anything.
I was only asking because I didn't know if maybe you knew what he was talking about.
No, I have no clue. And I think that's really what it was just an offhanded comment.
Some way of connecting those two from the past, I guess, from the movie to make it.
Maybe. I mean, who knows?
Because it seemed like Wolverine knew who he was talking about when he said, "You killed my father." And Wolverine seemed to, "Yeah, I know I did." There's obviously something there, but I didn't know if you were aware of what they were talking about, because I was a little confused, at least on that. But it didn't detract from me either. What would make this movie, actually put this movie after, let's say, 6 months or so, make you say that this movie would be better than The Dark Knight?
Maybe just time.
Time.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're two very different movies. Both of them are movies that are pushing the genre. I mean, when The Dark Knight came out, you got to remember a lot of people said that, well, that movie's not really a superhero movie, but it totally is. He's wearing a cape and running around beating people up. It's just,
this is a superhero movie that doesn't feel like a superhero movie in a certain sense.
Yeah. Well, that's how both of them are, I guess. This one really doesn't feel like a superhero movie, though. I don't know. It just depends. I mean, The Dark Knight might be more fun to watch. How weird is that? Because, like, The Dark Knight isn't exactly a fun watch either. Like, I mean, that's a pretty brooding movie.
Yes.
So, like, how weird is that, that we're even saying that The Dark Knight may be more fun to watch than Logan? Like, that that shows how dark this movie is. You know, I really like this movie. You know, it's funny, right before I saw this movie, a few days before, I finally got around to seeing Tarantino's Hateful Eight.
I have
kind of in
that.
A Western mood already. It's pretty good. I mean, it's a Tarantino movie, so.
I know my wife's seen that, so
it's got some stuff in it where you're just like, why is that in this movie? But for the most part, it's really good. I really liked it.
Now, from what I could find, Logan had a really good opening weekend for what Logan is. Mm-hmm. being an R,
maybe they'll make a sequel.
Well, at one time it was rumored that there was supposed to be a post credit scene into Logan, and then after
awful would that be?
Well, then a few days later the studio came back and said, no, there will not be a post credit scene. And some people were worried during that time when they thought there was supposed to be the one thing they didn't want to see was come back to that gray site and all of a sudden see a claw come back out of the rock. So that
actually
was really,
I have
detracted.
A feeling I know where that rumor came from, and that is probably from the Deadpool short film. I wonder if that was originally supposed to be shown after the movie. Well, short films are usually shown before the movie.
Yeah.
But what I'm sure people heard about it. I thought it was really funny.
What did you think of that? I mean, I know it's not really connected to Logan in any way.
Actually,
and I know why they put it in front. They're trying to, you know, draw your attention to Deadpool 2 next year.
I'll tell you what, it weirded me out because at first I thought I was watching Logan. When you just see his feet shuffling through the street, at first I thought that was. Then you see it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm like, what? He's in this? So I was really confused at first. I thought it was a really, really funny.
Now, people who've seen it in theaters, there's also the longer version online.
I saw it online, yeah.
The longer version online has a cameo
it
from
has
Stan Lee.
I actually think the theatrical one is better, although I really like, for the most part, as much as I love Stan Lee's cameo in it, and it was really funny, Ryan Reynolds' jokes in the theatrical one are better. Online version.
He also makes a phone call.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a little bit too much. It's really goofy to begin with, but it almost gets too goofy. And I like it better on the second one when after he hears the gunshots, the Superman John Williams music stops and he's like, oh crap.
Yeah.
And then he runs out and they start playing again and he's in slow motion.
And you get that butt thing as he's trying to change and you see the imprint of the butt.
Well, I'm just saying, I think it works better the way they did it in theaters, because with all the cutaways and all the other gags, kind of loses focus. Whereas this one, it's like, oh yeah, I'm still going to save that guy, but he's already dead. And I thought that was way funnier that way.
I actually saw it online first before mm-hmm. I saw. It's like, oh, what the hell he put out? And I watched this and I heard after I'd seen it online that this was attached in front of Logan.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, fine. That's no big deal to me. But I watched the online version. I immediately started laughing as soon as he turned and started running towards the phone booth. And then you heard the Superman music.
Yeah.
I found that hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That
I really did. I get the correlation here. He's a superhero. He's going to the phone booth. And
they would have had to. Well, you know, they had to have
paid out some money for the
Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Warner Brothers or ASCAP or whatever it is you got to go through to get the rights to play the music.
I think Warner Brothers owns the right to the soundtrack.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But however does that work? Yeah, they had to pay out some money to do that.
Well, Seinfeld did it once, so.
And Seinfeld, I mean, it was a big budget TV show, but it was still a TV show.
So. Yeah. Even though Logan was rated R, had a decent opening weekend at $85.3 million for its opening weekend domestically. I know worldwide it did a little bit better. It obviously did way better. Logan's opening for 10 X-Men movies puts it right in the middle.
Does it?
It puts it at number 5 because at the top opening weekend for an X-Men movie would be Deadpool. At
really?
At $132.4 million.
Are you serious?
And then it's X-Men Last Stand at 102.
I figured that.
And then it's Days of Future Past. And then it's X-Men 2. And then it's Logan. And then X-Men Origins Wolverine, Apocalypse, First Class,
wow,
X-Men.
Apocalypse is low down there.
And then Wolverine is at 10. But overall, you can't really consider Logan in this next part here, but the top two X-Men movies overall, period, is Deadpool and Days of Future Past, as far as worldwide total.
Man, Deadpool made Fox a lot of money because that was a low budget movie.
I think Deadpool is what they're going to be riding on for a while. With no Wolverine in the near future,
well,
and Hugh Jackman
know,
not coming back.
Ryan Reynolds wasn't... I know this sounds insane, like in this superhero sequel crazy world we live in, but Ryan Reynolds, like I was reading, he never planned to make a sequel to Deadpool. I know
but
there's jokes about it at the end, but that was never his intention. I don't think he ever thought it would because it was such a low budget movie. I think when he was working on it, they just thought it would be kind of like a fun, like, superhero spoof, basically. This isn't a spoof, but sort of like James Gunn's...
Guardians?
No. Before that, he did a movie called Super with Rainn Wilson.
Okay.
You need to see that. It kind of reminds me of Deadpool a little bit, except it's way more serious and it's way lower budget.
But I think Deadpool ended up exploding, I think, so much bigger than what the studio would thought it did or what Ryan Reynolds thought it would do that you can't avoid not making a sequel.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying I don't think that was ever his intention. When he went into it, I think he thought it would be like kind of these hidden gem kind of things. I don't think that he thought it would be that popular.
Boy, wasn't he wrong.
Yeah. The reason why that movie did so well, I think it was really because of the viral marketing.
Oh, yeah.
They did such a good job on that.
And something I saw right before we started doing this podcast is the producer, Simon Kinberg, has confirmed that after Deadpool 2, mm-hmm. there will be an X-Force movie that will star Deadpool and Cable coming. So I'm assuming that'll be the next one they'll do after Deadpool 2.
They got to be careful because let's be honest for one second.
But if Ryan Reynolds keeps his hands in that one as well, besides Deadpool 2, I'm not so much worried about it.
Yeah, let's be real for a second. How many comedy, and Deadpool is a comedy.
Comedy first, yes.
How many comedy sequels have you seen that are any good?
Probably a handful, maybe less than 5 that are actually worth it.
Yeah. And how many of that handful are actually better than the first one?
I guess that would depend on your own personal opinion.
Well, like, I think Anchorman 2 is good. And see, like, even that, I have to act like I'm defending it. Same with Ghostbusters 2. It's okay.
Ted 2's okay, but it's not better than the first.
I still need to see that. I need to see that. Get Him to the Greek wasn't very good. Yeah. What else is there? I mean, I don't know if you'd consider this a comedy, but like Back to the Future 2 isn't as good.
I don't know if you want to call Back to the Future 2 a comedy. Yeah, but, I don't know. It falls in that weird kind of range of different genres in my book. A comedy.
Yeah, I'm just trying
sci-fi.
To think of, I guess the Toy Story sequels are really good, but.
Would those be considered comedy or more? I don't know.
I think the first one was, at least. If he can do it, more power to him, but Men in Black 2 is terrible.
It's okay.
People liked Men in Black 3. I never saw it. People said that one was pretty good.
I liked Men in Black 3. Yeah. I really did. I mean, I know people say Men in Black 2 sucks and that Men in Black 3 still not as good as the first one, but overall as a 3-movie package, if Men in 2 is the worst of the 3 movies, I still enjoy all 3 movies. I mean, they are what
City
they are.
City Slickers 2. The entire Police Academy series.
Yeah, but...
just throwing these... I'm sorry.
I know, but Police Academy
is really
kind of
like
a different...
The best
animal.
Ones that I can think of, the 2 best ones that I can think of are Ghostbusters 2 and Anchorman 2. I'm sure there's something.
Oh, I'm sure like, there I is. Mean, I'm sure we're missing something out there.
People like Home Alone 2, I guess.
Home Alone 2.
It kind of sucks, though. Let's be honest.
Did you see someone's altered versions of like Home Alone and Home Alone 2? Mm-hmm. Of all the things that Macaulay Culkin's character did to those two guys, those things would have happened. What the realistic version of what should
have
been?
Have you ever seen a movie called Wes Craven's first movie, Last House on the Left?
No.
I'm pretty sure that's where Home Alone 2 comes from, because they set up booby traps all over the house, like the exact same way almost. Only it's not funny, and like it's really gory and gross. And
so, what would you before we move on to our last subject or
are
whatever?
You really going to ask what I'm going to rate this movie?
We've done it in all the other podcasts. Just real quick,
actually, I will, because I almost never give an A+. This is an A+.
Okay,
can't think of the last movie I gave an A+. I usually give A's,
A or A-, but never an A+.
I give a lot of C's. I give a lot of C's. It has to be really bad for me to even like Batman versus Superman. I think I gave it a C. Like, it's a watchable movie. It's got watchable scenes. It's got
you still haven't seen the extended edition yet, have you?
No.
You need to really watch that. Yeah, I'll give it an A+ too. Final thing we're going to talk about today is, in between this podcast and our last podcast we did, Bill Paxton passed away.
Yeah.
Passed away from a fatal stroke 11 days after having heart surgery to replace a valve leading out of his aorta. It was sad to hear. He's the only actor who can claim he's been killed by a Terminator, an alien, and a predator.
That's true.
For whatever that's worth. He's got some really memorable roles, at least as far as I'm concerned, some roles that I love. Even though he's not a main character in True Lies, I do love when he does pop up in True Lies. It's kind of the comedic relief. True Lies is probably one of my top three or four Schwarzenegger movies of all time. I loved him in that movie. Obviously, he's only got a small cameo in Terminator at the beginning with the punks when Schwarzenegger first comes back in there and he's wanting clothes. Yeah, he's part of that three guys who got killed. Weird Science was probably the really first role he got really noticed as Chet. I love that movie. I mean, it seems a little dated now, but that's still a fun movie to watch. Of course, Aliens.
Game Over, man. Yeah, the one everyone knows him. He's so annoying in that movie.
That one part, they're all kind of locked away and they're talking, and Ripley's like, well, the girl survived. Well, then why don't we put the girl in charge? And, you know.
That is a really funny line. That is a really funny line.
He's kind of the comedic relief, really, in that movie, if you think about it. Of course, Predator 2 with Danny Glover. That's okay.
It's
but it's not as good as the first Predator movie.
Was he the cop?
He was one of the cops.
Yeah.
He was one of the cops. Obviously, he gets offed as well. So, I mean,
I have a friend who really likes Predator 2. And I saw it when I was a kid. And then we watched it together on DVD. And he still really likes it. And I'm like, man, this one kind of sucks, honestly. It's not as good as the
first
one. I will
rank Predator 2 higher than I will any two of the Predator versus Alien movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those movies are garbage.
I remember the promotional stuff I used to see on TV for Predator 2, because Predator 2 was coming out right around in November, when they were releasing it late in the year. One of the promos I remember seeing on TV is, he's dropping in with a few days to kill.
I do love the first Predator. That is a good movie. Have you seen another Bill Paxton role? He wasn't a star in this. Jake Gyllenhaal. Nightcrawler.
No, I've not seen that movie yet.
It's worth watching. A lot of people love it. I didn't love it. Now, you and I both kind of work in that field of news.
Yeah.
You know, we do podcasts for a living. We both work in like news and TV.
We've had experience in media.
There's some things that they got right, and there are a lot of things that are just baffling in it. So, like,
well, any movie's going to take license with anything.
So. Yeah. But part of it is like, maybe it is a little different in like a big city like L.A.
Or
not
even
some
New York.
Podunk one horse town like where we're from. Well, the movie takes place in L.A., but maybe things are different over there. But now that I'm thinking of it, when I first saw it, I thought maybe it was a concept that would have made more sense about 10 years ago. But maybe I was actually behind the times. Wow. Epiphany. Maybe I was thinking about what it was like in our little one horse town, but now maybe it is more cutthroat now. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it could be.
I don't know. At the same time, though, everyone's using cell phones instead
right.
of big equipment.
Well, the media landscape, as far as how people get their news, is changing almost on a yearly basis. So, I mean,
but he's in that movie, and I didn't recognize him at first. He's really good in that movie. He's real scummy, and
wow,
yeah, he's good. I like
him. He was also in Edge of Tomorrow that year, same year that Nightcrawler was out, 2014.
What was that? Remind me of that movie.
Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat with Tom Cruise. He keeps going back, reliving the same day, kind of with aliens invading Earth.
Someone was telling me about that. Oh my gosh. Someone was talking to me about that the other day.
Yeah, he plays some military guy in that movie.
Now, when he was telling me about that, I was like, yeah, I can't think of it. But now I can think of, I never saw it.
He was also in an Apollo 13 movie with Tom Hanks.
That's right.
Twister, that really sensationalizes storm chasing in a certain sense. And I think that's really what started the big storm chasing craze that goes on. You see a lot of amateurs trying to go
out
chasing, tornadoes.
You might be right.
Because now all of a sudden you see a lot of these guys going out.
Boy, that movie's hokey, man. They're holding onto a rope or something. And it's
a
like,
rope tied to some pipes in the ground.
Yeah,
and,
it's like,
and
I'm sorry.
With an F5 tornado. Yeah. No, you're not going to survive that. I don't care who you are. Superman would be the only one. And even then, that'd still be a little ridiculous.
Well, the rope would break.
Yeah. No shit. He was in Titanic, but he wasn't on the ship Titanic. He was in the future with the older character Rose.
Right. Actually, I was just watching that yesterday. Watched Titanic. That's a good movie. We forget how good it is because all the eighth grade girls were singing Celine Dion for like the next half a decade. But so like that got kind of annoying. But go back and watch. That movie's really good. It ages really well. It looks like it could have come out last year.
Uh-huh.
Like it looks really good.
Well, it's a James Cameron movie.
Right.
I mean, it seems like...
I also watched I was in a James Cameron mood. I also watched Avatar early. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched, like, parts of it. And that's a pretty good movie, too. You kind of forget about... I think the whole world thinks it's trendy to hate whatever James Cameron is making. But he makes good movies, man. Avatar has some pretty hokey stuff. But, I mean, you know, it's a kid's movie. And it's a good kid's movie. So there you go.
And he's going to do 4 sequels to that movie.
I don't
see how
that.
He can do that. He's putting a lot of eggs in one basket in my book.
Yeah, especially, and he's taking too long. He should have done it like when people still had Avatar fever.
I don't mind that he's going to do a sequel to Avatar. And if he has plans in the back of his head of maybe doing 2, 3 or however many, but to come out and saying, yes, I'm putting out 4 more sequels seems a little stupid.
You know what?
To say,
like, he doesn't even need plots. Like, honestly, like, watching that movie, he could just have a bunch of people, like, them running around looking at weird crap at this planet for 3 hours straight. I'd be like, okay, this is kind of cool, I guess. Remember screensavers? I was going to say it could be like 1 3-hour-long screensaver, but then I was like, no one uses those anymore, so.
But then again, being James Cameron, I say it'd be stupid to announce you're doing 4 sequels, but I guess if there's a director out there who might be able to pull off such and have them all be at least considered successful, he would probably be the guy that could maybe pull it off, but I still won't say he can. But then again, as soon as I say that, he'll go out and prove me wrong. Not that he cares what we think, but
yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah, I'm going to make the best Avatar movie just to prove Reggie wrong.
Not going to happen.
I listen to this podcast. I'll show you, you son of a bitch.
Well, if James Cameron is listening, or actually for some weird reason.
God rest your soul, Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Oh, another weird trivia. I believe the butler that's in all three of the just small role, all three of the old Spider-Man movies, Harry's butler, Bernard, that's Bill Paxton's dad.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And he's not an actor, obviously. He was some sort of like lumber salesman or something.
Well, how the hell did he get that role then? With luck?
No, it's just because he's Bill Paxton's dad. And when he was retired, he liked just being in roles and stuff. And Sam Raimi knew Bill Paxton. And so he's like, hey, you can, your dad can be the butler in this movie. And he has one line each.
Yeah. But Bill Paxton, he was starring in the TV version of Training Day, which is current air on CBS, which CBS has a big decision of.
Which, that's when I got a question. How can you make a series based off Training Day?
Well, okay.
Is each episode going to be a different Training Day for somebody?
I don't know.
Regardless
of how they're pulling it off, CBS has got to figure out, do you recast for Bill Paxton's role? Or do you just say, well, because he died, we can't, even if they want to move on to try and do a second season, it's just done?
No.
So he
was he starring?
Yeah, he's one of the two main stars. I believe he was playing Denzel Washington's role from the movie.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he was playing that role.
Yeah.
He was on TV. He did do Big Love on HBO, which got him a couple of Emmy nominations. And then he was also in the 2012 Hatfield McCoys miniseries on the History Channel. He played the leader of the McCoys.
No way. I've seen that. I didn't recognize him.
So
that was Bill Paxton?
Yes.
That's awesome. I did not know that.
You wouldn't think 62 would be young, but
that's
nowadays,
pretty young.
Nowadays, that's just really young.
He's pretty young.
He's probably still had another good 20 years of acting if he really wanted to left in him. Any final thoughts on anything we've talked about?
Boy, this is a really depressing
podcast.
Talking about death in movies, death in real life.
But if you have not seen Logan, obviously you listened to this podcast before, you should have gone and seen it. Whether you have or have not seen Logan, you should definitely A, go see it, or B, go back and see it again.
Take your 5-year-old to see it, for crying out loud.
No, although I did notice at the theater, a gentleman walked in with his, I'd say, about 10-year-old son, which I guess that's his choice.
I don't really have a problem. I saw violent movies when I was a kid. I don't have a problem with it, but if your kid doesn't...
You got to make sure your kid's adjusted it well enough in the head before you go taking something like that. I mean, just because it's a comic book character doesn't
not necessarily even that. Mean... I think you're better off just letting your kid watch it on DVD. That's fine. I go to the Warren 21 anyway, which is 21 to enter, which there was still some jerk sitting next to me that was a total idiot. I think he was really stupid, but he was mouth breathing the whole time, and I wanted to say something to him, and then I saw he was like 21, but just when I saw him, I was like, man, I feel sorry for him now. So
just... If you haven't seen Logan, go watch it, or just go see it again if you have seen it. It is an excellent movie. Probably, if not the best comic book movie this year, definitely one of the top two or three.
This year?
This year. If not the best, I'm sure.
It will be. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is good, but it's not that good.
You can find the links to James's True Believers on ReggieStake.com. You can now find my podcast on Podomatic. And if you hit the little subscribe to iTunes, even though I'm not, quote, on iTunes yet, but if you have an iTunes account, it will start downloading to your iTunes account, which I found out just by screwing around with it. Hey, so nice. That's kind of cool. Nice. Now, every time I upload a podcast to Podomatic, not too long later, it pops in saying, hey, you got a new podcast on my iTunes account I can download. So that's kind of cool. You can also find me at ReggieStake.com, Facebook, Twitter, at ReggieStake. Thank you for listening. Definitely be back for podcast number 33, and we'll talk at you later.